Item 9, consider and take possible action to adopt the 2021 SACERA budget. Henry, is that you? There you are.
Good morning, everyone. You bet. How's the sound check? Everything good?
Everything sounds good. You have the floor.
Excellent. Excellent. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen of the board. What I have for you is a presentation of the 2021 proposed operating budget for SACERA. We go through a practice of sitting down with all departments and getting a good estimate, a good handle on expenses for the next year, using our actual activity for the current year and thinking of any anticipated needs. So for the next year, we do have some anticipated needs. We have an ongoing recruitment for an internal auditor. We have an investment officer position that we're going to be working on filling. There's a disability specialist and a member service specialist. So we have those. We have some line items in there for overtime and temporary costs for the ongoing recently approved ICON data services project that's going to parallel our pension administration system that's being worked on right now with the RFP. In connection with that, we've earmarked more consulting fees for Siegel, the unit that used to be called LRWL, is now Siegel, the consultant that's helping us with the new pension administration system. So there's money earmarked for that. We have some professional services to catch up on our disability medical reviews and the work that we have with the member benefit statements, production of those. Some office expenses, precautionary expenses to keep an eye on, make sure that the office is clean and great shape, and safeguard folks. So there are fire-related cleansing services that we have. And later on, we'll have a sheet that we'll talk about another piece of the budget called a capital asset. This is timely because the pension administration system is going to be an ongoing project that we're going to capitalize when it's completed. And when it completes, there's an accounting rule that we depreciate over 10 years. So it'll accumulate in an account. And when it's finished, we will allocate it as depreciation in that year. So with that, let's travel on to the document. You've seen enough presentations, so I'm just going to word it out here and keep it brief. Let's go over to page 3 of the document. The proposed budget that we're proposing is 17.6 million. And you can see by the first pie chart there that 71% of that is administrative cost and 29% is non-administrative. Now, even though we talk about one budget, it's really a combination of two things, the administrative and non-administrative. But the
Is this showing on, it isn't showing on mine, the document? Is something wrong with my department?
We're not presenting. I'm hoping that you're looking at your agenda packet. I'm just speaking about the budget. I'm not presenting anything.
All right, okay. I just want to make sure I understood. I read it yesterday, but all right.
Right. I thought it'd be easier and I'd keep it brief since you've been bombarded with plenty of screens and shots, and we'll just talk it through. So so up at the top of page 3, the upper chart, that's where we break up the two. And the reason I focus on this one is the darker, the 71% that gets measured against the CERL limit, the 21 basis points. That's the one that gets measured of this entire budget. Even though we talk about 17.6, the 71% is the part that gets measured. And that 21 basis points is multiplied against our latest measured actuarial accrued liability. When we did the valuation report a month ago or so, we came up with a little over 10 billion in actuarial accrued liability. And when you multiply it out, the 21 basis points, it allows you a limit of $21 million. Our administrative budget, okay, the 71% is about 12 and a half million. So it's about half. under the limit. That's one of the first measures, and that's why we break it up. So the other thing that I want to focus on is how much of the budget we're asking, how much it grew over last year. So we're asking an additional overall increase of about 888,000 over last year. It's a modest 5% increase. And the reason for all of that is that second chart that you see on the bottom. Most of it is broken down in personnel services. We spoke about the recruitments, the ongoing effort, overtime, temporary costs. The second piece is IT systems. That's the project consulting work that Siegel is going to do to help us with the new PAS system. So that's where most of that 888,000 is coming from, broken down in that circle there. So that's the highlights of page 3. So moving on in your document over to page 6.
Hey, Henry?
Yes,
Henry,
sir.
Question. So just to close out that bottom of page 3 discussion, of the items that you called out related to the increase, meaning being the recruitment and additional software data provider services, are those expenses that we anticipated nonetheless? In other words, these aren't new or surprised. These are expenses, for instance, on the software data provider, if we're talking about Siegel costs, those are costs we contracted for, right?
Correct.
Okay. Correct.
It's just a matter of where they're landing, and we put them in the budget. So they weren't in last year's budget because the phases weren't arriving. The Siegel folks, it's going to increase in 2021, place in there so we can forecast them as they're landing, as they're accruing. They're not new.
Okay, so I guess my reaction to it is that in terms of presentation, whether it be in a chart form or some other form, is just to maybe differentiate between expenses that are contractually required versus maybe items that parachuted in that we didn't know about or were new or represent some kind of new liability we have to grapple with, because I see a real material distinction between those, you know, in terms of what they are. Anyway, food for thought, but just to kind of differentiate those.
Absolutely. And that's a good point. That's part of the budgeting exercise. What were the surprises? What were the unforeseens? Another review is, well, we planned for this and we decided to make a business decision and we carried it over into another year. You know, another priority came about. So there's a mixture of items. The internal auditor discussion and the investment officer, that's more of a carryover. It's not new, but it carries over because we planned for it there. But you're right, and I'll try and distinguish more of that, what's unforeseen and what's planned for. But the chart here is trying to illustrate, is just trying to break down where the 888,000 comes from.
Got it.
Increase. So if we travel over to page 6 of the document, this is the global 17.6 budget. I know there's a lot of numbers on here, so we'll kind of break down just how we put it all together. If we travel down to the very bottom, you know, as accountants do, we kind of look, what's the bottom line? You can see over on the right-hand side in the bluer shaded area, according to my copy, you see the 17.6. And there's the same 888,000 that's grown over the previous year's budget. So the highlight of this section here, this page, is that we take a look at the 2020 budget that's on the left-hand side, that's the grayer numbers. We take a look at what was going to be expended for the year. We make an estimate, even though today's November, we take a look and roll forward the expenditures all the way to the end of the year, try to get apples and apples comparison. And we use that information to help us calculate a fresh new budget for the next year. That's how it travels over to the right-hand side. And then we make comparisons, how the new budget is growing up or down over the previous year. And that's what we were speaking of earlier in the previous pie chart. And you can see that the increase is 5%, but it breaks it down by line items. You can kind of look at the, oh, in the middle column, the one that says change over 2020 budget, you can see where that breaks down. $638,000 for personnel services. We spoke about the positions. And as you go down, professional services, you see a decrease there. And it has to do where you're anticipating less legal, less audit services. This less audit services had to do where we thought the ICON subledger decommissioning was going to carry over into this year, and it didn't. We got it done sooner, so that had a budget decrease to it. Then moving on down to the bottom, information technology systems. You see the increase there, 272. The majority of that is project consulting. That's the Siegel work that we were referencing earlier. So this format is very similar as how it gets presented in the CAFR. And I like following the same format from the annual audited report to the budget. So there's a good correlation between the two. So at this point, I know there's a lot of information on here. Any questions? Making sense so far?
Yes, one question, it's a general question. I'm not trying to open Pandora's box, but I guess my question is, with an uncertain duration of the current COVID-19 situation, and you know, we've had a recent setback, of course, and just in terms of the number of cases and kind of gone into a different tier, you know, we're generally not able to occupy the offices. And I guess the question I have is generally, has there been any discussion with the building owner, the landlord, regarding whether and to what extent there might be a need to adjust or accommodate rent in light of that?
Have not had those conversations. The incentive to move in there pre-pandemic is still there. The first 5 years, we get a couple of months rent. So we basically pay 10 months worth of rent to reside there for 12 months. We have had some conversation with them about what I mentioned earlier about cleaning, janitorial. Do we use them? Do we use somebody else? And we pencil in some numbers in there for the need there. At the moment, we are using them to clean some of the offices just to keep everything very precautionary, very safe. But in terms of bigger scale about rent reduction, I haven't approached Sierra Pacific on any of that. The building itself, there's tenants that move in, move out, and I have to admit the building is very safe, very clean. They do a very good job. Some of the facilities were closed. They reopen, probably to close. There might be others in at Cicera, Gail, Christina Dunn, who are more familiar with what the numbers are. But financially, we haven't talked about any of the rents. We still have that same lease agreement.
Okay, thank you. I just wanted to throw that out there as a general question. It's really, without knowing how much longer and how much more severe the situation, you know, would become as likely to remain, it's hard to say. But when you think about it, we've not really been in the building since what, April, May of
8 months.
Yeah.
Yeah, we've been more away from it than we've been in it.
Right. Okay. Well, just want to keep an eye on that. I don't know what's going to happen. Hopefully, I'd like to be optimistic and think we're going to see.
Because I've been rent moratoriums and other things. We really require, as part of any rental relief, that you show that you've been impacted by COVID, not just that you're not using a facility. So, for example, anyone who's taking the benefit of our small businesses that do have an eviction moratorium, they have to demonstrate to their landlord that because of COVID, they've suffered a loss, they're not able to pay their rent. So frankly, as long as we're getting by and they're meeting the standards, you know, a lot of landlords are being hit really, really hard. So I'm not inclined to try to renegotiate it or anything if they're doing the best they can, particularly because we're not being overly impacted because of COVID. I don't think we could demonstrate that.
Correct. Scott, I think, weren't you asking, Scott, about in the context of rental rates going down in general? Well, I mean, in San Francisco anyway. I'm not sure about the rest of the Bay Area about that, but was that the context of your question?
Well, it was actually probably several fold. It was, you know, we're in the situation where we're not able to use the space we have. I'm in that situation now in my other life, and without burdening you, ended up reaching an accommodation with the building, and that lease is going to be terminated because the continuing need for that lease became pretty clearly non-existent or existent in a different way. And my building is probably currently in Walnut Creek is probably, and I'm just going off ballpark from what the building has told me, there may be 10 to 12% occupancy right now. It's that bad there. It's decimated when I go there. I mean, it's the building across the street from the BART station. So, you know, when you got BART ridership at 12% and you've got nobody going into the office, you know, that stuff tends to snowball, and it's really, you know, it's had a pretty sizable impact in the Walnut Creek market. I've talked to a lot of brokers. You know, the sublease market is strange. Bottom feeders are out there everywhere. So it's a combination of I get that we're considered a commercial entity for purposes of leasing, but, you know, at the end of the day, we're a pension trust fund is what we are. And our monies that we invest and work, which we've been hearing about for the last 4 hours, we do that work to make money for the benefit of the members, right? That's what we do. So I was thinking that in the context of what we are, that there may be at least a basis to have a discussion about one looking at, I mean, we haven't occupied the premises for 8 months. I don't know how much longer it's going to be. And the market has reset right beneath our feet just because. And I don't know to what degree Concord's different than Walnut Creek and Pleasant Hill and so on. I'm sure there's differences, but it's just something to consider. I'm not, you know, jumping up and down and advocating. I'm just throwing it out there that we might want to think about it from the standpoint of the longer term relationship, because I do think there's going to be a market reset. I think our presenters, although they're vague, you know, in terms of questions asked, know there's going to be some impact on core real estate.
Well, to the extent
that you can quite quantify, change the way your employer relationships.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Go ahead.
I'm not the person, but to the extent of where I can kind of contribute, you mentioned some COVID-related expenses. What we did do is the laptops, I think it's 36 or might be 40, the laptops that we purchased to equip staff and get everybody set up nicely, and IT did a super job, Son and his team, of equipping everybody. Those costs of that equipment was transferred out of the admin budget to the disaster recovery budget. That's the component that's also a non-admin expense. So that pushed it out of the cap limits. And had a conversation with Gail about these other COVID-related expenses, such as the cleansing, or maybe some of the newsletter, the additional communication costs that we're doing. Some of these, we spoke about the unforeseens. What did we have to do different this year because of the pandemic? Additional communication. Those costs, they're not complete now, but in my 2020 estimate, I tried to bring those over and call them disaster recovery. It's not eliminating them, but it's just classifying them so it doesn't hit the administrative rate so hard. And it's spreading. The laptops, it was spread over 3 years. you know, the accounting rules. So I try and, you know, take every measure. Going back to the office lease, you know, we did put out some money. There's some already some sunk costs into fixing up and creating that third floor. So that one's being depreciated over 10 years. We made some very nice leasehold improvements for the boardroom, the offices, the furniture and equipment. So all of that is part of that depreciation that you see now that's going to go on. So that was customized just for us.
And Scott, too, I did want to mention that we do have a skeleton crew at times in the office, opening mail and doing certain activities that need to be done in the office. So we are utilizing the office in some way. It is a good idea, though, to engage with property management, not only on the rent side, but also in the CAM charges side, because in some ways, maybe there's not as much energy usage because more folks aren't in the building. But then, you know, that decrease might be offset by, you know, they might be, you know, I know they're doing additional cleanings and they have additional costs around COVID. So that is something I think it's appropriate to engage with them, just so that we have a good estimate on our expenses for next year.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure, you know, the CAM area expenses, the common area expenses, they tend to go up and down depending, you know, it's like a ledger. One goes down, but another goes up, like cleaning or what have you. I'm just suggesting it might make some sense at some point to just discuss with, for instance, our broker when we were, you know, negotiating to get into the space. Because when I was listing our space for the sublease market, it was a real eye opener to me as to see what was actually happening in the marketplace. The bottom was dropping out, and the rent levels that are existing now relative to what they were just a year ago. It's pretty astounding. And I don't know that it's going to change overnight, even if we, you know, quote, get back to normal. It's hard to say. So it may be a discussion worth having to see, what the potential outcomes are. But I, you know, on the real estate side, certainly our broker can provide information about the current market. And I'd be surprised if it's different than what I'm telling you.
Yeah, and we will do that. Thanks, Scott.
Okay.
Yeah, and just to round out that thought process, continuing on the allocation, I also do a rent allocation, and I charge our dear friends, the investment team and the legal team, their fair share of rent because they're considered non-administrative, and that's my effort to make sure that the ceiling, the cap limit doesn't get reached. I know we have plenty of room, but there's an allocation of depreciation and overhead and rent that gets charged to their budget as well. So that's part of the review that we allocate. So that's the highlight of page 6. There's a lot of detail on there, and I try to summarize and bring all the important items. Moving on to page 8. There's a similar schedule. Page 8 is the administrative budget, which is very similar format, but these are just the ceiling, the cap limit type expenses. Moving on over to page 10 is the non-administrative, same format. The sum of those two is the first one that you saw. So I don't want to burden you with too much detail, but we welcome any questions. And moving on to the last slide over on page 12, this is the proposed capital budget. This capital budget sometimes gets overlooked in the mix of things because, oh, there's nothing exciting about it. You know, we've got a few hardware items and we depreciate them. But this particular year, we're going to be experiencing a lot of exciting change with the new pension administration system and the data services project. So I'll point you to the upper half where we have 2021 capital purchases, and you see two line items there, one for pension data conditioning. The term is data conditioning. We may have heard cleansing, but it's conditioning is the appropriate term. Data conditioning project, and we have pension administration system. And that is the best forecasted number of figures that we anticipate spending next year. a little over $5 million. So it'll just accumulate here as an undepreciated asset throughout the life of the completion as it's being developed. And the minute it's completed, we'll begin depreciating over 10 years. So that's the important part of this. In the section below, that's what we spent before on other assets. Most of this is the leasehold that we moved in. Okay, it's about $1.5 million. That's pretty close to what we spent to fix up the leasehold building. And that averages about $289,000 depreciation that we allocate to departments. So that's the exciting part of the budget. That summarizes the review. Very modest increase, 5% over last year. We spoke about the reasons, the needs, the forecast. Welcome the feedback about trying to separate the unforeseens versus the ones that were planned for. And I'll let the powers to be to talk about rent and explore more ideas there. Any other questions that towards the end of my presentation on budget?
I wanted to make a quick comment too on that page 12, where he had mentioned that there's a placeholder for the $4.35 million for a pension administration system. That is merely an estimate. Obviously, nothing's been approved, or you know, we're still in the evaluation process when it comes to the vendors. So I just wanted to mention that. That's not a hard dollar cost at this point. It's purely just a placeholder. Yeah.
Thank you, Gail. My crystal ball might be duller than somebody else's, so it's just a crystal ball, but I think it's a pretty educated guess. It's not inside information, but it's my best guess.
It's what's known as alternate facts. These days. So a question, Henry, on it's my understanding, unless this has changed, that we can't begin to depreciate the new system until it's in operation or being used. So that plug figure is going to stay there for another year or so.
Yes, it's going to grow. And let's use some pretend information. Let's say it lasts 4 years, 5 years when it finally gets done. So these costs will accumulate. You'll have layers. So it'll build up to a complete dollar amount. Maybe the data conditioning project finishes first, but because it's tied to the pension administration system, depreciation will hold off until the entire project. The accounting rules say that the entire project, as soon as it launches, that's when you can start depreciation. But I want to point out that the depreciation will then flow down to the bottom. So you have 10 years worth. In year one, you'll have your depreciation go up. And that's the one where it will hit the operating budget like we discussed earlier. Right now it's capital. It's what's called construction in progress, for the lack of a better word, development in progress.
I just didn't wonder if the rules had changed since I last got involved in this, and I guess not. Okay, thanks.
No. Good comment.
Anyone else have anything for Henry on this item?
I just want to let Jerry know that Coolidge is no longer president, though, so the things have changed a little bit since then.
Sorry, Mr. Gordon.
Okay. So
very good.
Hearing nothing else, well, it's been 2 hours. To me, the remaining items don't look like they would take very long, but I don't want someone out there to be very uncomfortable. Does anyone need like a 3-minute break or anything?
Todd, just a comment. Item 9 is an actionable item if the board so chooses. Okay.
Yeah. Very good. Thank you for the reminder.
I'd make a motion to approve the proposed budget for 2021.
Second.
Moved by Jerry, seconded by Louie. Any further discussion? Okay, roll call vote. Anderson has left the meeting. I don't know if Jay is one of these callers, but I'll call Quan. Okay, no longer present. Finley?
He's there.
Okay. I'm seeing a thumbs up for an aye. Gordon?
Aye. Let's try that again.
Finley's audio aye. Gordon?
Aye.
Holcomb?
Aye.
Pearl?
Aye.
MacDonald?
Aye.
Phillips?
Aye.
Smithy? Aye. And Watts?
Aye.
Motion passes 8-0. Thank you again, Gail, for the reminder. So I didn't hear anyone saying they needed a break. So let's just get through these last items.